Welcome to another episode of Blue Republican Radio with me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. This is the show for the Liberty Curious all across these United States. And as always in my shows, most of the time, I have an awesome guest this time too. His name is Mark Herr, and he is the founder of the Center for Self-Governance, formerly the Tennessee Center for Self-Governance, but because they're so awesome and so effective, they are in demand nationwide, and they are now, I think, in, did you say 44 states, Mark?
40 states.
Well, it's good enough, and it'll soon be 50. Now, I have had the privilege of meeting Mark and actually being one of the students in one of his classes. And the Center for Self-Governance, they deliver a curriculum to educate and empower citizens to have a direct effect on the political process as it may be going on in their cities, in their counties, or in their states. Many of us, many Americans, but certainly many Americans who count themselves as libertarians, and certainly those who count themselves as being kind of on the anarcho end of libertarianism, think that the best way to play the political game, the democratic game, is not to play it at all, because there's just no way we can win it. There's these two parties, and frankly, we can moan and moan, and indeed we do, but nothing really ever changes. Well, one of the reasons we feel that way, and it's a reasonable feeling, but one of the reasons we feel that way is that as citizens, we are not sufficiently educated and we do not know what power we have. When we turn up at the county meetings, at the city meetings, at the state meetings, where our representatives sit and make decisions and make our presence felt, and not only make our presence felt, but coordinate our efforts effectively as teams. And it turns out that when we do that, and this is something anybody who goes to one of Mark's classes will discover, turns out when you do that, as normal private citizens, you don't need money. You don't need the kind of resources that are spent on elections to actually completely change the way political decisions are made. So I've got Mark on this show because what he does is so, so important. We spend so much time, those of us who love liberty, complaining and saying what should be done. But the teams that Mark and the Center for Self-Governance educates, they go and do it. And they have remarkable results. And in fact, one of the most amazing things about sitting in the first of the classes of the curriculum of the Center for Self-Governance is to discover just some of these successes that private citizens have had all over the country by implementing the techniques and the ideas that Mark and his organization, as I say, empower citizens with. So Mark, thank you so much for being on my show, and thank you so, so much for actually doing what you do.
Robin, I thank you for having me on your show, and I look forward to exploring the realm of liberty with you and your listeners.
That's what we do here.
Absolutely, and there's so much to discover, right? It's a universe of liberty that we can explore, and there's so many different realms that we can look into. Our students have quite a bit of success, and I think it's not because we've discovered anything new. I think what we've done is we've rediscovered what people who've gone before us discovered back in the 1700s, who discovered it from people from the 16th. And it's just been this ongoing struggle of mankind for thousands of years on answering two simple questions. Number one, are people a beast? And number two, can people control their government? And the people who created the United States of America accidentally stumbled on this experiment called self-governance. And that's the premise for our organization, is that people can control government if their assumptions are that government also is a beast that needs to be controlled.
Now, where would you like to start? Because that's a wonderful setup. Obviously, I'm pretty sure that most of our listeners are already on board with the idea that government is a beast that can be controlled. Now, and I want to emphasize that what you teach in your curriculum, it's not just these ideas. You're not just revising these ideas. What you teach is very pragmatic. It's very hands-on. It's, if you already know that, then what do you do to actually keep that government chained down, right? What do you actually do, and how do you do it?
Yes, and there are practical, technical things that citizens can do, and it first starts with their assumptions. Thomas Jefferson said that, you know, he wrote the Declaration of Independence to give expression to the American mind with the proper tone and spirit of the occasion. So that being the premise for participating in government, the average citizen who shares that assumption can now begin to express in terms of words what it is that government should or should not be doing, or what is the what should or should not citizens' behavior be like between each other when they interact with government. So technically, we start in level one by evaluating what the students' assumptions are and going through some basic principles that they can apply for themselves, and if they can make that change in their assumptions, Robin, then it will go to the next step in their journey of self-governance. That is changing their language. If their language doesn't change, then how can you expect a government that you think is a beast to actually listen to your command when you say sit, for example, using the metaphor of a dog owner who wants their dog to sit or heel or stay. In this case, it depends on your assumption. You have to be in control of that animal. You have to know how to train it practically. It has to know what your voice sounds like. So in level two, we spend a great deal of energy working on their language. For example, let me give you an example. Nonverbal communications. When we meet with our government officials and sit behind the desk and we humbly ask them to heed our requests on behalf of our needs, and with this kind of
deferential attitude?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is the nonverbal that is communicated to that elected official? What's communicated is that you are subservient and that you are not in control of that beast. So level one and two deal mainly with assumptions and language. And at the point where they make the transition or the paradigm shift, we can work on the practical foundation through their social contract. And in America, what that is our United States Constitution at the federal level. It's the Washington State Constitution at the state level. And it would be King County, which is where the seat of Washington State's control is located. Excuse me, and that's Thurston County. Anyway,
yes,
the various... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
The various levels of government have an agreement between the people in America how that government should operate and what are the rights of the people in engaging and interfacing and controlling that government. So in level three, our students learn practically... What is the basis of authority that government has, and how do you apply that? People don't know how to apply their authority to government, and so...
Right, this is... I want to just pick that point up, because I think that captures what you do that sets you apart from a lot of other liberty organizations. It's the recognition that you have authority over government, but how do you exert that authority? Because
exactly.
Most of us think, well, there's just no point trying, because practically, we may have that authority... theoretically, but practically, you know, you can try and exert it, but they're not going to listen, they're not going to respond. But when the student that comes out of your course knows how to exert that authority in a way in which that gives the government, whichever particular set of officials, no choice but to respond. You actually enable them practically to exert that authority, right?
That's exactly right, because you're right. The theory is good and it sounds good, it itches the ear, but in practice, what does that actually look like? And for students, if their assumptions are that government has too much power, for example, and they have none, then the student will assume that when they're interfacing with government, they have no power.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts in the mind. It transfers to the mouth. And the mouth is kind of the link here. practically the starting point for all of this, Robin, is in your listeners' minds. What is their assumption about government power and their authority to control that government? You can hear it in their language, Robin. When a person speaks, if they are speaking from those assumptions, it will always be from a deferential, subservient, slavish type of mentality.
Mark, hold on right there. We're going into the break, and we'll come back and discuss this in a second. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. This is me, Robin Kerner. I'm talking to Mark Herr, the founder of the Center for Self-Governance. I don't usually do endorsements, but if I'm going to endorse anything, any organization that I've been involved with, the Center for Self-Governance would definitely be one. When we went into the break there, Mark, you were talking about how we kind of suffer from our own assumptions, that usually we can trace our ineffectiveness to errors of our own minds. And it's interesting that you should kind of talk that way, say that, because when I'm doing training for candidates, when I'm doing my political communication training, I say, in a somewhat different context, I say kind of exactly the same thing. We have certain assumptions about how people are persuaded, about how our psychologies are built, and most of them are wrong. And those mistakes, the faults in our own paradigms, cause us to, bluster and work and make lots of effort and have very few results. Now, you're saying something similar with respect to the assumptions that we have regarding our representatives and our relationship to them. So carry on with that thought. Tell us more about that, Mark. What is it that we have to unlearn? I mean, you've kind of already touched on this. What do we have to unlearn, and what do we have to learn, and what do we have to change about how we approach our representatives and our political process generally? And perhaps, because I'm sure all my listeners are still really skeptical that, this is all going to sound great, but, it just isn't going to make any difference. Perhaps also, at some point in this segment, tell us a couple of the success stories that you've had where just a small cadre of people have made quite a difference to the politics or policy decisions in their community.
Absolutely. So this is really important for your listeners to understand that our assumptions determine how we behave. And so if you assume that government has too much power, then what does that say about the power of the people? That means they have none. And and then your language will result in action or inaction.
Mark, I just wanted to let you know that your Wi-Fi there or something, your signal was bad. We were losing you.
Okay. How's that?
Do you want just go back a few sentences and go over that point again, because I think maybe the listeners wouldn't have picked it up.
Okay. So it's really important for your listeners to understand that whatever their assumptions are, that's the way they're going to speak. And so how they speak will result in action or inaction. And so what are our assumptions about government? If they have too much power, then that says that the people have no power. So if you speak that way, then the people will not exercise it. They'll follow your pessimism because that comes out in your language. So it's kind of like what is in the water? If it's tea, then that's what you'll be drinking. The essence will be tea. Well, what is in your language? What are in your words? If the essence is that you have no control and government has all power and can issue and take away your rights, then that's how you will speak. And the result will be more of the exact same thing that you hate. So, that, and I know that, listen, that sounds like, okay, give me something practical to do, and we do. And it starts with, you have to change your assumptions with regards to government and yourself and its relationship. Practically, how about this? Some practical examples of our students changing their assumptions. Number one is the way they interact with elected officials. We had some students go into their elected official's office, and the typical citizen, when they engage the elected official, they come at them from a deferential, subservient, servant kind of attitude, nonverbal communication. But in this case, we change the way the student engages the elected official, and it comes from an equal position initially. So they'll walk into the elected official's office and they'll say, I'm not here to talk about an issue. I'm here to talk with you about why you ran for office and what is your legislative agenda for the next year and how can we help you. This really puts in the elected official's mind, number one, it puts them at ease. It puts them in a position, a sense of, this person is here not to attack me. This is somebody I can work with. Now, what are the results? The results are phenomenal. Democrats and Republican elected officials and elected officials typically who don't talk with people outside of their districts, our students get meetings with both kinds of elected officials, and elected officials who are not their representative are starting to meet with them and call them for support, research, etc.
Now, that's interesting. So you're saying that you've got teams, people who've been through your course. The representatives have experienced, obviously, interactions with your students. And the representatives not only are, let's say, being affected by your students, but they actually are getting something out of it themselves that make them want to go back to your students for help, for what? For knowledge, for... What's going on here?
It's both of those conditions. So the student is gaining access into the legislative process. They're gaining influence with the elected officials. They're learning about the real story behind the legislative process. And the elected officials that the students build the relationships with are getting the benefit of having active citizens who are on the outside that can elaborate what's happening on the inside. They're getting research support, and they're getting some support when the students are supporting those particular issues.
Right. So basically, that just by getting involved, actually kind of walking through the door of town hall, as it were, armed with knowledge and an effective, non-deferential, but let's say polite but firm approach. On the one hand, your students can move policy the way it needs to be moved. But in so doing, the representative is seeing something that will benefit him or her. That actually, it turns out that these representatives don't have a vested interest only in keeping their citizens at bay. That is wrong, right? Is
yes.
That wrong? That is wrong. So what is it then? I mean, you mentioned research. This is a big part of what your students are doing, right? I think you talk to your students about, gathering the information to make a case, but that then information is something of value to the representative because it's basically doing some of the representative's work for him, or at least doing some of the work of the representative's staff for him. You can actually move a representative at the same time as making his life easier, not harder.
Well, many, many of the levels of government that are closer to the people in the United States, the representatives do not have research staff, and the staff that does any sort of research has a conflict of interest with regards to job security for that particular bureaucracy.
Right.
So by adding the ingredient of the citizen participating in the issue that affects them in their community, you're creating this dynamic where the representative can now compare and contrast the information being given to him inside that legislative body compared to the people who that issue is going to affect outside of the body.
And it turns out that doing that can have a much bigger impact than we, you know, maybe libertarian cynics would assume, right?
Yes. Oh, huge. Now, absolutely huge. Let me give you an example from Navajo County, Arizona.
Okay, we've got 30 seconds left in this segment, so hit us with it.
So this group, they found out that the traffic camera, video cameras contract was coming back up. It was voted on by the city council, and so it seemed like it was too late. But by studying the process and how it works, they were able to resurrect it through a city councilman who had voted again, for it, and he changed his vote by motion to reconsider the contract. Destroyed this contract, and now traffic cameras are being removed from this county in Arizona.
Okay, that's nice. Ending with a segment with a success story. We'll be back in a few minutes. So in the first part of this show, Mark Herve, the Center for Self-Governance, has been telling us about some of the foundational elements of what he teaches, which are covered in levels 1 and 2 of CSG's curriculum. But the curriculum has 5 levels. So I'd like Mark to tell us a little bit about, you know, based on these foundations, what comes next. And something that I remember from level 1, which was the class that I took, that made kind of a big impression, and it's kind of obvious when you hear it, but I haven't thought of it myself. We put so much attention on the electoral part of the political cycle rather than on the legislative part of the cycle, i.e. when there's no elections to get excited about necessarily, but all the legislation is being passed or made. One thing that CSG is emphasizes strongly is we need to exert our efforts in the legislative part of the political cycle rather than the electoral, certainly much more so than we do now. So there's a couple of things to get your teeth into, Mark.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
So this is absolutely right. The average citizen needs a massive paradigm shift in order to get out of their funk of not controlling government. And that starts in level 1, and the journey continues in level 2. We work their way out of their mind into their mouth. And then in level 3, we get into the practical foundation of the basis of authority within the level of government that they're focused on. So let's say they're focused on a county government, for example. The county governments in the United States tend to have different legislative cycles than compared to the federal government. And if the citizen knows that cycle, they can begin the process of learning to control it. So if the way we work right now is the political parties have trained the citizens to concentrate on the election cycle, putting all of their money, their energy, and their backing into the candidate of their selection. And then during the legislative cycle, those candidates now become elected officials, and the citizens go back to producing for the economy or whatever it is that they do in their daily life, and they entirely neglect the decision-making cycle, which we call the legislative cycle. So these cycles are completely backwards, where citizens are focused on the election cycle, go to sleep in the legislative cycle, and we repeat it over and over again to a cycle of doom and gloom. Well, if we change your paradigm, you will start focusing on the legislative cycle where the decisions over your lives are made, so that you can identify those who need to be in the election cycle, either retained in their position or removed from their position. Both cycles in control of the citizens now guarantee a higher degree of probability that you don't lose your republic, you keep it.
Now, I bet a bunch of my listeners are still thinking, well, this all sounds well and good, but surely you would need hundreds of people, of citizens in a county, to be able to have any effect on legislation, you know, in that part of the cycle. So this is all very well, but how are we going to get these hundreds of people together? Now, what do you say to that?
I would say two things. It does not take a majority to prevail. It takes a tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. So what is the minority and how big of that crowd do you need? In our experience now, we've shown that a county needs anywhere between 5 to 30 people in order to move anywhere between 3 to 15 issues in any given legislative cycle.
Say that again, because that is kind of astonishing. If you consider how many tens or hundreds of thousands of people there might be in a county, that based on practical experience, I mean, you're not just making these numbers up. This isn't, these aren't numbers that drop out of some nice, neat theory. This is, you know, this is empirical. You have empowered and educated your students, and they have gone out in teams of between 5 and 30 and changed, I mean, these aren't small changes. Some of these are big changes in legislation, right?
Let me give you some examples.
Go ahead.
I gave you the one example in Navajo County, Arizona. That was a team of 4 people, and they completely destroyed a traffic camera, video surveillance camera contract in their county. In Shelby County, Memphis, Tennessee, there was the AFL-CIO was organizing with an organization called Workers Interfaith Network to bypass the state legislature and introduce collective bargaining through the county commission through something known as wage theft. Now, it's a legitimate problem with federal and state laws applying, but in this case, it was being used by the unions to effectively institute collective bargaining within the state of Tennessee. So this team of students chose this as their issue, and the way they orchestrated inside the legislature and outside of the legislature and communicating with their fellow citizens about the issue, they were able to destroy that bill unanimously.
How many people were involved in this effort, Mark?
There were 11 people involved in that effort.
Okay, now how did it go down?
So, and I assume when you say how it goes down, how did they defeat it?
Yes.
So the ordinance was being introduced by the county commissioner according to their process and procedures. The citizens discovered it in the agenda. They met together to have a strategy session. What do we do about this? What is the messaging? Who are the audiences, et cetera? And then they decided an inside strategy of how they were going to collect the intelligence to determine what the vote count was on the county commission for this ordinance, and then to get to determine which audiences they needed to communicate outside the legislature in order to put pressure on the county commissioners. In this case, this team decided to oppose it. So they went out into the community, gave the citizens targeted audience a very specific message regarding wage theft. Then they were able to interface with the media, specifically with very specific targeting with regards to faith in working. And that's a little bit more detailed than I think your listeners have time for, but it's level 2, level 3 type training. And then the level 4 side of it was they recrafted the ordinance, introduced counter legislation, and as a result, the debate on the county commission became so heated that they pulled the entire legislation off of the agenda and destroyed any attempt to institute or circumvent the state legislature with regards to collective bargaining. Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal to watch citizens who are wielding their civic authority in their community and controlling instituted government. Phenomenal. Let me give you another example, and this is with regards to energy consumption devices called smart meters that are attached to your house to regulate energy consumption and rate use. in Memphis, this was a very important issue to this group of students. They decided to contact the citizens and get them involved in the debate. It ended up in a coalition of Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, 912ers, Tea Partiers, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, some black pastors. They organized an outside game where they went into a district that's the most violent district in Memphis. It's 100% African American. There's 80%+ non-voting, highly violent, low educated, low income, and non-voting. So the target was to go visit these particular non-voting citizens and ask them for their opinion with regards to the implementation or the use of these smart devices on their house in the regulation of their energy consumption. Now, that's big language for us, but the messaging was the key. We had the electric bill of a city councilwoman. Her rates shot up 900%. And so this team orchestrated an outside game to communicate this with those folks. And the result is that these people came into government participating for the first time and instructed the city council not to implement the smart meters on their house. And the result is the city council punted. I mean, Robin, they punted this out of the city council agenda to the board of directors for the utilities and put it on their shoulders to decide. And it's still an ongoing football game between the citizens and out of control government.
And how many people were involved in that game, in that effort?
In that game, it involved pretty much the entire team. It's about 30 people. They orchestrated a door-to-door campaign, petition signing activities. They lobbied the city council people. They interfaced with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, a union, 10,000 employees of the utility company. They interfaced with black ministers in Memphis, obviously Martin Luther King. He was a minister. He was assassinated there, and so there's a thriving African-American ministerial movement in Memphis that still goes on today. And so our team of about 30 with a coalition of about six or seven different groups spanning across partisan lines. Oh, I forgot to mention a group of professors from the University of Memphis who support global warming, whereas like the Tea Party group, they didn't support global warming. But on this issue, they joined forces, collaborated, crafted strategy, communicated with the community, got them engaged, and controlled government. Phenomenal.
You know, this speaks to something that I'm always talking about as, you know, blue Republican, which is the power of the common ground. You know, I think in our movement, you know, we get so into, winning the argument and trying to get everybody to buy into our political paradigm, that we miss the opportunity to find the common ground on which we could act to actually move politics in the direction of our paradigm, even if we don't go all the way. And yeah. I think this is something that that you really teach your students to understand and take advantage of.
Yes, we do. So by level five, Robin, our students have had a massive paradigm shift with regards to the relationship they have with their fellow citizens and their government. They are now actively participating in relationship building inside and outside the legislative process. They're now crafting inside strategy and outside strategies. They're organizing to meet with fellow citizens. They're organizing to meet with legislators to move them. And then they're effectively creating coalitions and moving their community in a direction that has balance between controlling government and government controlling people. You now have students, or I would say citizens, who are literally self-governing. You have citizens who are now changing their culture in their community.
But, you know, what would you say to someone who says, God, that's all great, but it sounds like so much work. I just don't have that many free hours in my week.
Well, there are 8,500 hours in a year, 168 hours in a week, and we spend 33% of our time sleeping, about 30% of our time in some sort of job, with the remainder of our time for our errands, for our TV, for our coffee, for our movies, mm-hmm. for our fun, for our soccer. And so if we could spare between 6 and 9 hours a week of the 168 hours, minus the weeks that we need breaks and vacations, that's a very small price to pay compared to the 8,500 hours there are in a year.
Indeed, it's a small price to pay for the potentially huge upside, right?
Oh, now, absolutely.
Now, I'm imagining that when a, let's say, a legislative body at whatever level has been on the receiving end of this kind of action once, does it change the vibe? You know, does it temper how they behave going forward on other issues, perhaps, or is it too soon to tell?
And what you're referring to is the legislators specifically?
Yeah. Yeah, once they, you know, because if they've been going years doing whatever it is they do behind those closed doors, getting away with it because nobody turns up. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of CSG grads are turning up and changing things. Does the fact that, just the knowledge that citizens are now turning up, mean that the legislators are, let us say, a little more humble in how they legislate and how they seek to make policy going forward? Or is this something that it's too soon to tell and we'll have to monitor over the long term in areas where your guys have already had success?
I would agree with you that that's something that will need lots of observation and feedback over the long term. In the short term, what we're seeing is the legislators are reacting one of two ways. One is they're acting violently. They're extremely frustrated by citizen participation, and they, for whatever reason, don't believe that citizens need to participate in government. And so then they manifest what they've already been hiding from the citizenry, and that is that there's this disdain for citizen participation in government. People are a beast, and they need to be controlled. The other is what you described. There is a subset of legislators who are humbled by the participation of citizens. They actually feel that more citizen participation is healthy. So you have this struggle taking place right now because the culture is so ingrained that the citizens are not participating. Therefore, they're not smart enough. They're not enlightened enough. Therefore, they shouldn't participate. These are the enlightened people in society who are fulfilling the roles of government. And therefore, the citizens are coming out of their role. They should be working. They should be producing. We're government. We should be. This is our job. You've assigned us this. Get out of our way.
Now,
so we'll see over the long term how that comes about.
We're just about to finish this segment, but I want to say even the first reaction, that violent reaction, is great for us as people who love liberty because it shines light on the cockroaches and enables us to get the rest of the community to vote those guys out in the election cycle. We're going into the break. Be back soon. So thanks to Mark Herr of the Center for Self-Governance for joining us this show. Mark, we've got the last 2.5 minute segment. I would like you to give listeners whatever information you can about maybe participating in CSG, finding more out about it. Where do they go?
Absolutely. Robin, thanks for having the Center for Self-Governance on today. And to your listeners, I'd just say I understand your pessimism about liberty. But the language of liberty, it frees people to participate in their community, unlike any other nation on earth. And we've got an opportunity to do so. Check us out. You can come check our website out. There's videos on there. There's descriptions of the classes. There's some testimonials and so on and so forth. You can visit our website at tncsg.org. That is tncsg.org. Or check us out on Facebook at Center for Self-Governance. And we also have a YouTube channel with all kinds of videos of presentations and so on and so forth. Center for Self-Governance is our YouTube channel. And I really look forward to hearing from you guys. And as always, keep the Republic and set the brush fires of freedom in the minds of men, no matter what you do.
That's what we're all about. That's what this show is about, too. Did Mark, do you have any anything scheduled coming up in different parts of the country?
Oh, we do. Our website, if you go to the website under classes, there's a calendar there, and we are in 40 states now. I'm in Washington State this week. I'll be in Yakima, Washington tomorrow, Idaho at the end of the week, and then all the way across the country to New Jersey and South Carolina. This month and next month we'll be in Colorado and Texas and Arizona. So they'll just really need to go to the website and check that out and find out where we're at.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Mark. And I should say, as I said earlier in the show, I participated in your level one training, and that's a day-long training pretty much, right?
Yes. And we what we do is we customize the trainings depending on the needs of the area we're going. We send instructors there. We coordinate with the class host for the venue and all those things. We can schedule it over 3 nights, 2 nights, or 1 day. Really just depends on what your needs are. We want to accommodate.
We're done, Mark. That's great. We're done.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you.